Welcome to the Peyto Energy Trust year-end results conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Darren Gee, President and CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, thanks, Joe, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining our 2009 year-end and fourth quarter conference call. I realize there's a lot of business news coming out this morning and even this afternoon with the Alberta royalty announcement, so thank you for taking the time to join us this morning. With me in the room today is Kathy Turgeon, our Chief Financial Officer. We've got Glenn Booth, our VP of Land. This morning we've got Brian Lang, our Drilling Manager, and Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Representative. Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, is in New York this morning presenting at a conference. And if you'd like, later today, you can listen into that conference. It broadcasts, I believe, at 12:10 Mountain Standard Time or 2:10 Eastern. The address for that conference is on our website. Jim? Great. So, Jim, why don't I turn the call over to you?
Okay, thank you. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financial results before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. So, Darren, I'd like to start with a question for you. What do you think was the most significant achievement for Peyto in 2009?
Well, Jim, I think some may say that the most significant achievement for any company in 2009 was just survival. But, you know, I don't think we've ever thought that our survival was at risk last year. You know, we were always pretty confident in the health of our business and in our future. So, you know, I think I'd have to say that the most significant achievement for Peyto last year was really our ability to find a more profitable way, if you will, to develop the opportunities that we have in the Deep Basin. We've always known the Deep Basin was full of opportunities. We've always known we've had a lot of opportunities there to pursue over the years. That's why we've been focused for the last 11 years at developing them with vertical wells typically. But this new technology, I think, really opens things up for us. And as you point out, I think it's very significant. And really, you know, we've only started to just recognize the amount of opportunity and the amount of potential that we've got in our land base and that exists in the Deep Basin. It's going to be, you know, a lot of years, and I think a lot of exciting years to come where we actually realize a lot of that potential.
Okay. Now, last year, when we held our year-end results conference call, we just had the news of a change to the royalty regime in Alberta designed to encourage deep drilling development. Now we're about to hear about new refinements to the royalty framework. What impact did the last changes have, and how are we poised going forward knowing that the framework is subject to regular revision?
Yeah, regular revision, I hope not. But, you know, I think the news last year was positive. You know, we embraced the new drilling incentives that came in, and I think the royalty incentives did help us get started with the capital program that we're currently working on sooner. Gas prices were obviously very soft, so that kind of delayed things a little bit. But we knew that the incentives were positive for our economics, positive for the horizontal development that we were doing. So it allowed us to get going, I think, earlier than we would have. And I think, you know, considering the activity that we've seen over this winter, and Brian can maybe comment a little more on the drilling activity later about, you know, just the overall levels of activity we've seen this winter, I think that royalty incentive was a big key there. Because it's made a lot of gas plays that weren't economic at $5 economic at $5 in Alberta. You know, our projects have always been competitive with some of the lowest supply cost stuff just because our cash costs are so low and our finding costs are top quartile. So we haven't always needed, I guess, the royalty incentives to drive us to develop, but some plays definitely do need that. So I don't think we would have seen the rig count the way it was this past winter had we not had that drilling incentive. And now we're sitting here waiting for this afternoon's announcement. Bated breath, I guess we have. The results of the competitiveness review that's gone on in Alberta, changes potentially to the royalty regime. You know, if I had to guess what they're going to come out with, I think they're probably going to extend this concept of a minimum royalty to a payout point. And then everyone shares, the Alberta government and the Alberta citizens and the producers tend to share in the profit once payout has occurred. So, you know, I think that's it's a good structure, that one, because it's similar in many jurisdictions to the rest of the world where you get your money back and then everybody shares in the profits going forward. The one encouraging thing I can say, you know, about these, I guess, constantly changing royalties is that the Alberta government does recognize that a healthy oil and gas industry in Alberta means a healthy economy in Alberta. The two are tied together, and they will always be tied. It's good that they recognize that.
Right. Well, I'm going to turn to Brian Lang, our drilling manager. One of the biggest changes in the last year has been our move to horizontal drilling horizontal wells. What impact has this change had to our drilling operations?
Well, Jim, the biggest change has been obviously in the overall cost to drill and complete a typical Peyto well. The vertical wells we were drilling in the Deep Basin were ranging between $1.5 to $3 million of capital, and now the horizontal wells are ranging between $4 and $5 million. So, you know, we saw in 2009 that the unit cost of services came down substantially. However, horizontal wells require significantly more time, more steel, and a lot more fracture stimulation as well. So, you know, some of this stuff was offset by, you know, the use of existing well site pipeline and access road infrastructure, so that was helpful. Also, horizontal wells require a lot more upfront technical work. So we're implementing new technology, it's changing technology, and we're really leveraging on the operational expertise of our team.
Okay. So our FD&A costs were down really significantly in 2009 over 2008. How have the changes in the drilling industry in Alberta impacted this with the lower rig counts? And what's the outlook for these costs in the coming year?
Well, the cost of services, as I mentioned, was down quite a bit. I think 15 to 20% is a good range, and that was obviously coincident with the drop in rig utilization. So what we saw was that, along with some efficiency gains, allowed us to capture a capital cost structure that we haven't seen since 2003. With 90% of our capex invested in new wells, these improvements were obviously material to our FD&A cost structure and reductions. Now recently, as you mentioned, there's been an uptick in rig activity, and that's really come along with the advent of these horizontal developments and multi-stage frac developments. I think the industry really, though, sees this as a near-term response to the drilling and royalty incentives that Darren mentioned. So we'll see that taper off, I think, through the summer as some of that effect wears off. At the, you know, in the end, I think our year-over-year rig utilization will be up a bit, but most service costs will remain relatively flat in 2010.
Okay. Back to you, Darren. While our production in 2009 dropped from 2008 levels, our final quarter and subsequent production has shown a steady and substantial increase in production. Current levels are back to where they were in the first quarter of 2008. What has changed here? Is this change sustainable?
Well, that's a good question, Jim. I mean, the production growth, you know, is coming obviously directly as a result of our capital program. We increased our capital program back in the middle of the year last year. We got drilling again more aggressively. We're bringing on more production and at a faster rate than our production base is declining. So as a result, we've got production growing. And assuming we continue this same pace of drilling and building, it will keep production growing. But, you know, practically speaking, we're going to have to shut down for breakup. That's probably 6 weeks of downtime, and that's coming on here quite rapidly, actually, as we've seen some of these warm spring days showing up early. And so that'll allow, actually, our declines probably to catch up with some of the production that we've been bringing on. So there'll probably be a little bit of a lull in terms of our production growth. But then as we get going again this summer drilling, assuming that there's not a whole lot of spring rains or something, then our production should start growing again. But, you know, I've had that question a bit where the production growth, you know, how sustainable is this production growth? Peyto's had some pretty phenomenal production growth in the past, and then we had some periods where our production was flat, even declining a little bit. And, you know, it entirely depends on the pace of capital spending and the results we're getting, of course. One of the realities of growing our production, especially with a lot of new flush production, is that our corporate decline rate is going to increase. You know, if you take, for instance, when we came into this year, we had, you know, approximately 20,000 barrels a day for round numbers, declining at a base rate of about 20%. So, you know, it's going to, that base is going to decline about 4,000 BOEs over the year. And if you said that with our capital program we could add, I don't know, say 10,000 BOEs a day of new production, then you've got this combination of two pieces. You've got this brand new wedge of 10,000 BOEs a day by the end of this of 2010, say, that is going to have a first year decline that's going to be quite steep. It might be 40 or 50% in the first year. And then you've got this other wedge of production, the base wedge, so to speak, that'll go from declining at maybe 20% to declining at, say, 15%. And so when you combine the two, you take what we would have as a base decline this year of 20%, and you increase it to a base decline next year on, say, 25 or 26,000 barrels a day of 28%. And so you've gone from almost 20% base decline to 30% base decline. And that's how, when you start to add these big wedges of new production, you can see how we increase our decline rate. And you can also see that at some point that's not going to be sustainable. You can't keep increasing over and over like that, increasing your decline, because those declines are going to catch up with you. And in a lesser way, people have seen those wedges of new production as we've brought them on, and they've seen how Peyto's decline has accelerated in the past, and how at some point there it starts to catch up with you. You have to continue to invest more and more and more. And that's a phenomenon I think we're going to see down south with a lot of the shale gas. But, you know, the one twist is that with the types of reservoirs we produce from, these tight gas reservoirs, they have an ever shallowing decline. So that base tends to stabilize over time, because the declines become less and less every year. Conventional reservoirs, the declines are the same every year. So if you can imagine layering on bigger wedges of production that are always declining at the same rate, that treadmill effect gets more and more every single year. And so it becomes harder and harder to grow. If ever there was an asset base where you could achieve a sustainable production growth on, this is the type of asset base. These tight gas sands that we produce from is exactly the type of asset base where you could get sustainable production over time.
Okay, well, switching tracks to reserves, our year-end reserves for 2009 show a slight reduction in the proved producing, but large increases in both the total proved and proved plus probable categories. Can you explain the evolution of our reserves over the last year?
Sure. You know, as we talked about in the podcast that's on our website, we didn't really spend a lot last year, $73 million of capital. So, you know, we didn't build a lot of new producing reserves. In fact, we didn't even replace all of our production, even though we had much improved efficiencies. But what we did do with the $73 million was prove that the horizontal multi-stage frac technology works in our deep basin reservoirs. And that was quite substantial, because that allowed us to increase and recognize a lot more of our resource that can be developed over the next 2 or 3 years. Paddock Lindstrom, our reserve evaluator, typically with the undeveloped reserves that are booked, will only book out about 2 or 3 years worth of inventory. But now, because we're harvesting a lot of these opportunities and developing a lot more of the resource faster, a lot more of that undeveloped gets recognized within the first 2 or 3 years of activity beyond today. So we saw a large uptick in our undeveloped, both on the proved side and the probable additional side, and that was why we had such big increases in both total proved and proved plus probable additional categories. You know, one of the things that was advantageous, obviously, about being in the deep basin and applying this technology to areas where we've already got a lot of proven production from vertical wells is that a lot of the inventory then is proved. There's high levels of confidence because we've already got all kinds of proved producers in a vertical sense all around where we're drilling with horizontal wells. Unlike many of the shale plays up north, you know, they're stepping out having to prove that the reserves are there, all the while trying to extend these plays out, and so they don't get to recognize their reserves, and they don't know if those reserves are really proven or not until they've, you know, stepped out over time. So it's hard for them to judge whether or not they have a lot of quality, profitable inventory until they've done this step out. But we already know that this inventory that we've got is profitable because we've got vertical wells producing it profitably all around.
Right. My next question is for Glenn Booth, our VP of Land. In 2009, Glenn, we increased our investment in land over 2008 by about 50%. How would you describe our current land position?
Well, Jim, I would describe it as a growing at a rate that would support our new and successful technical drilling program. I guess looking back at 2008, we spent about $2 million, and we only acquired about a net six sections. In 2009, we spent about $3 million, and we acquired over 30 sections, or almost a township, of net undeveloped lands. This was a program by design. In the summer, we had planned to sort of target the last five sales of the year, and these were postings in our core areas and in some of our new prospect areas, close to infrastructure, and I would suggest that always supported by geology and geophysics. And that is so that we can sprinkle these into our upcoming drilling lineup so that they're ready-made prospects. But if you look at the end of the year, you'll find that we've got varying interest in about 500 sections of total acreage, and that would be about 14 townships of land that we've got varying interest in, and what I would consider the greater Sundance and Kakwa area. Of that total, 55% would be in the undeveloped category, and we generally always carry high working interest, and that would be on an average about 75%. So I like what the future holds for us. We will plow through our existing land that we've got a lot in Sundance and Kakwa, but we're going to continue to add to it through drilling deals, hopefully continue to be successful at land sales, and we'll do that in a measured way. We've always done that, but we'll continue to do that.
Okay. Now, my next question is for Kathy Kershaw, our Chief Financial Officer. Despite some higher costs in borrowing and the lower production for 2009 over 2008, we actually saw lower costs per MCFE for interest quarter over quarter and year over year, 2009 to 2008. Can you outline the changes in our debt over 2009?
Well, our debt levels decreased by $65 million from the beginning of 2009 to the end of 2009, which certainly had an impact on our interest expense. But the overriding impact was created by the low interest rate environment throughout the year. Even though our bank fees were increased significantly on our lines, the underlying interest rate decreased so dramatically that our interest expense year over year was very low.
Okay. Darren, looking at our capitalization, available credit, and the expected capital program of 175 to 200 million in 2010, how are we poised going forward to deliver on our plans?
Well, Jim, I think we're well funded for our capital program this year. You know, in the past, we've always used some external funding when we were growing substantially, and I don't think this year will be any different. We'll likely use some of our bank lines. Our DRIP program is back in place, which is equity, so we'll be using some equity too. You know, we'll be using our cash flow that's left after distributions, and it should be more cash flow this year than last year because our production volumes are growing, assuming the gas prices don't collapse too far and assuming the government doesn't come out with increased royalties this afternoon. But if we see a big drop, obviously, in gas prices, then that's going to affect our cash flow. But we're continuing to hedge, too, so we're taking a lot of the gas prices that we currently have today off the table. But, you know, I get the question about funding a lot. People have trouble or they struggle with seeing how we're going to fund a $180 or $200 million capital program. And there's a couple of things that people have to keep in mind when they're doing the math. And one of those is that we're obviously earning a drilling credit as we're spending money. The $200 a meter is a pretty substantial drilling credit. Last year, for instance, it reduced our capital program by 13.5%. So, you know, if it did the same this year, we'd knock $20 or $25 million off of our capital expenditures or capital requirement. The second is the DRIP program. Obviously, you know, we've got unit holders that are excited about putting their capital back to work within Peyto. And so that does redeploy some of that distribution payment back into our capital program. And then we've got growing production, too. You know, we're bringing on new production as we're investing capital, so that's increasing production and cash flow that we're going to have available to fund. So when you incorporate all these pieces, I think the funding requirements aren't nearly as challenging as a lot of people think they are.
Okay. The most common question I get, Darren, is that people are concerned what impact our conversion to a corporation at the end of this year is going to have on distributions as they become dividends.
Yeah. You know, I think, Jim, in some ways people are getting a little too carried away or maybe overblowing this whole conversion issue. We've seen several trusts convert into corps already, and it's quite a seamless conversion from unit holders' perspectives. You know, as for Peyto, it's not going to change at all how we do business or what we do every day here. You know, Brian's still going to come to work every day running the same drilling rigs, drilling new gas wells, developing new reserves, exactly the same on January 1st, 2011, as he did on December 31st, 2010. Maybe he's a little hungover from New Year's Eve, but, you know, the only real difference, I think, is how unit holders are going to see that distribution, which is now called a dividend, and the fact that from a tax perspective it gets treated a little differently. I suspect that we'll still pay a dividend monthly as we pay a distribution monthly now. Most trusts that have already converted have continued that monthly payment practice. You know, our last distribution for 2010, which is the December distribution, gets paid out January 15th, and then come February 15th, that'll be a dividend payment. You know, the only real consideration is what that dividend's going to be. And we all know from a tax perspective that a 12 cent per month distribution after tax is equivalent to a 9 cent a month dividend because you have that dividend tax credit. But, you know, if you're asking me what's the distribution rate or the effective dividend rate going to be next year, I can't really say, because there are a lot of things changing between then and now. For one, we're actively trying to grow our production and cash flow, which means we should have greater profit to share by then, and assuming gas prices are reasonable, of course. And we're also proving up a lot more opportunities. So we're going to have to look at how we fund those opportunities, what kind of growth they can provide us, and see whether or not we want to accelerate our capital program in 2011 and reinvest more of those earnings. But, you know, either way, we're going to deliver a very good total return, whether it's in the form of a reinvestment return or growth in our asset base or in terms of a yield. You know, one of the things that I think I've always tried to stress to our unit holders at Peyto is that we are way more efficient than most E&P companies or energy trusts out there. Our cost structure is more efficient. We have higher margins. We generate greater earnings. All of those things ultimately allow us to sustain a higher level of profit sharing than most other companies in this business. And nothing about that has changed or will change with corporate conversion at the end of the year.
Okay. Looking at where gas prices have been over the last few years and where the futures market has them right now, there doesn't seem to be a lot we can count on. They've moved a fair bit, though in the far out futures not as much as the near-in ones. How is our hedging program holding up? What's it doing for us in terms of our business plans?
We've, as I mentioned in the press release, done very well with our hedging program, this layering in of future sales, looking out to sort of a 24-month period or four seasons out. And because for 2010 anyway, we've got a lot of production forward sold at very good prices. We're probably more forward sold today than we've ever been. So we've secured a lot of that price going forward, which makes sense because we're bringing on a lot of new production, and we want to know that we're going to be getting the cash flow from that we need to pay for it, and you know, to generate the returns we want from those capital investments. You know, I think we're covering off the downside by locking in some of those future prices. And I think ultimately over the longer term, demand and economic recovery are going to continue to pick up, and that's going to continue to put some more upward pressure on natural gas prices. But, you know, that's probably going to take a few cycles here before we get through that. This recession we've just had was a big one, and it's going to be a while before I think North America's fully recovered from it and we see the full effect of industrial demand back in. You know, knowing what our gas prices are going to be for most of the production this year does give us a lot of confidence with respect to our distributions. It gives us the confidence to say that we're going to keep our distributions at 12 cents to the end of the month. It gives us confidence to commit to a larger capital program, for sure. And so, you know, it's nice to have that security with the commodity price.
Okay, and before I turn this call over to questions from our other participants, Darren, where do you see our focus in 2010, and what comments would you like to make about the outlook for our activities this year?
Well, I'm hoping, I guess I'm not hoping already, we've seen some of the milestones in 2010 that, you know, these are big hurdles for us. It's an exciting year, I think, because we've already celebrated and announced that we've distributed $1 billion to unit holders. $1 billion is a huge number, especially for, you know, what we perceive to be a little company that we are at Peyto. We've only got 30 full-time people, so, you know, having generated $1 billion over the last 11 years in terms of earnings and flowed that out to our unit holders just in the last six or so years as a trust, that's a huge milestone. You know, later this year, hopefully, we're going to be into record production levels. We're going to have grown our production beyond the level that we've ever seen before at Peyto. So we're excited about hitting that kind of milestone. And by the end of the year, we're going to have drilled a whole pile of these horizontal wells. We're going to have a really good data set to look at. Hopefully, we'll have actually tested it in even more formations and have even greater opportunities out in front of us. You know, we're going to try one in a Falher formation. Maybe we get down to try one in a deeper formation like the Blue Sky or the Cataman. If there's shallow formations like the Dunvegan that we can try them in. You know, these are above and beyond the three formations we've already tried, those three sort of primary targets that we're working on with them today. But, you know, one of the things is we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that we have long-term focus at Peyto. We should. We have long reserve life assets. So, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, what are the next 10 years going to be for Peyto? You know, we've got to continue to look forward at the opportunities that we have today and what new opportunities we want to bring to the table. We have to continue to seek out a lot of those new opportunities. Yes, we have some new technology to apply to our existing land base and our existing opportunities, but we've got to continue to add to that over time. When we started with Peyto, we had one section of land, and now we've got you know, several hundred thousand acres, and we're going to continue to add to that. 10 years from now, I'm hoping we have twice as much land that we're working on and twice as many opportunities. We have a great model here at Peyto. I think it's, you know, it's been tried, it's been tested. We've survived some of the harshest business conditions right now. It's proven. It works. We just need to stick to it, be diligent, and I know we're going to be successful over the long run.
Well, thank you, Derek. Joe, if we could turn the conference call over to questions from the participants.
Certainly. The first question will be from Gordon Tate with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Darren, do you see a time when horizontal drilling will be almost exclusively the type of drilling you'll be doing on your asset base?
Good morning, Gordon. It's a good question. You know, I don't. We still, you know, look at our faulted Cardium opportunities, for instance, where we've got the sand in the Cardium broken and thrusted over top of each other of itself. So you've got the sort of stacked sequence of sands. We look at that, trying to think about how we would develop that with horizontal wells versus vertical wells, and we still think that the best way is with vertical wells. You know, we use our 3D seismic to thread through that fault to intersect the maximum amount of fractures. We put big fracs in both the bottom sheet and the top sheet so that we can get access to both the reserves on the bottom part of the sand as it heads in one direction and the top part of the sand as it heads out in another direction. We've seen history. Rio Alto, for instance, several years ago tried to use horizontal wells to develop the faulted Cardium, laying those horizontals into the hanging wall or the upper sheet, for instance, of the fault. And it wasn't all that successful because you don't get the type of drainage that you're looking for. So, you know, there's a situation where I just can't really see us being as successful with horizontal wells as we are with vertical wells. And I think there's others like that. You know, the certain formations are going to lend themselves to horizontal drilling and other formations probably not. We're quite deep, you know, between 2,000 and 3,000 meters deep, so this is challenging, technically challenging drilling. You know, trying to thread through a thin formation directionally is very difficult, especially as we get closer to the foothills. You've got a lot of thrusting going on, so knowing the geology well enough to thread the bit through a skinny little zone, it's going to be almost impossible with horizontals. So, you know, I think the horizontals will have a lot of application, but they're not going to answer all the questions and provide us with the solution for all the development strategies we're going to need.
And then you talk about possibly producing from some other zones you mentioned. And do you have rights to produce from any of the zones you're looking at? Do you have to acquire more rights?
Well, we can always add rights, for sure. But, you know, we're talking about that typical Cretaceous package that we've been working with vertical wells. Sometimes we're segregating, you know, catamans, for instance, or gething zones or blue sky zones. Sometimes we've been commingling in the past some of those zones together in vertical wells. The flare is I think, an exciting one for us. It is a big, thick sand package, a secondary target in our vertical wells that we haven't pursued a lot, much like the Wilrich. The Wilrich oftentimes is referred to as a lower flare sand anyway, but there's upper flare sands, especially in Sundance, that have a lot of gas in them. We see them as gas charged when we're drilling through them. We've got a few producers in the flare, but not a lot. We haven't really chased it as a primary. But we know there's a whole pile of resource in there, and if the horizontal wells can unlock a lot of this other resource for us more profitably, then it can do that in the flare as well. So I think, you know, we plan, I believe, on drilling a horizontal flare well this year, and if successful, maybe we get a couple in this year. The Dunvegan, you know, is a formation that within the Deep Basin has proven to be very productive. In certain areas, guys have done very well developing it, even with vertical wells. I know up in our Kakwa area, for instance, in Canada, has done a lot of Dunvegan development, and they're starting to apply a horizontal drilling into the Dunvegan. You know, it's a formation we typically haven't done a lot with. We've got a few Dunvegan producers, mostly in the northern part of our asset base, but we see it as a potential zone that we could develop with horizontal wells successfully. So, yeah, there's probably three or four more sands at least that we're going to be able to try over the next couple of years. And of course, there's other operators trying other zones. You know, as we both know, there's little juniors been trying them out, and there's big majors like Incana and Husky and others trying them out in different formations. So that's the great thing about Alberta, is they reproduce all that data back into the public domain. We get to see exactly what they did and how they did it, and see whether it was successful or not. And if it does, you know, we're not so proud as to not copy what they did and be successful too.
Thanks,
Bert.
And there are no further questions on the telephone lines at this time.
All right. Well, thanks very much for everyone tuning in. I realize there's a lot of conference calls, there's a lot of press releases coming out these days, and everybody's probably eager to get on to the next conference call too. But thanks for tuning in this morning. It'll be interesting to see this afternoon what the Alberta government has to say. And we should be able to comment on that when we're back talking to you on May 13th with our first quarter conference call. Until then, check with our PETA website. We've got updates every month on our capital program and on our production new ads from that capital program. And we should have hopefully a new presentation up for everybody within the next little while with a lot of industry comparatives on how the rest of the sector looks compared to PETA's performance over the last year. So until then, we'll talk to you then. Thanks again.